RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again! It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied!
And he swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
All right, we're back. Playtesi episode 296. Remember to hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. Find us on the socials at Playtesi, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Sammy's here, Pat's here, Gordo here. Sunday night for us. Pat's just their winning streak just got snapped. Brutal game. But we're not here to talk about the Pats. Maybe enough said. I don't know. But we are here to talk about the Red Sox, and there's been a reasonable, last week we did 3 episodes that were not, we didn't do a Who Says No last week. Usually we do kind of like 2 normal episodes at the beginning of the week, a Who Says No at the end of the week. Last week was the winter meetings. There was just so much going on, and Thursday night leading into Friday was like, okay, like the winter meetings ended, let's recap everything. Pete Alonso went to the Orioles, the Red Sox lost out, like let's hash everything out. But still plenty to talk about here over the weekend. Some rumors dropped, but fellas, how's it going?
It's going, man. Tough Patriots loss, like you said. I am more and more getting very tired of all these rumors. I feel like 95% have nothing behind them, but it is fun to dream on the possibility. So I'm not fully there yet where I'm completely tired, but I'm getting close.
I'm not letting Pat go because I told Pat before this weekend that he needed to send me his picks for Sunday because he's been sending in some winning slips into the group chat. And I told him, I want your picks because I want in on this. He sends a bunch of picks into the group chat. All of them, it's not like they were bad picks. Most of them were like 2 for 3, 3 for 4, whatnot. So Pat, then for like the 4 o'clock games, he throws a bunch of others down and he's sending winning slips he didn't send me. So I've got a bone to pick with Pat. Because Pat's making money, and I'm not.
I did just send you the picks for tonight, so there you go. As far as how I'm doing, been much better. This was just such a nothing burger of a week. It felt like nothing happens on the Sox front. A little bit more rumors, but no like actual moves. Pat's come off the bye and blow a huge leads. Just what a shit week, man.
Who's Ryan Florney? Pat just sent me a 2-part parlay, and one of them is a guy named Ryan Florney. Who is that?
Cowboys, like, 5th wide receiver. You're welcome.
Shout out Ryan. If you're listening to this and Ryan Florney scored a touchdown last night, shout out Pat. Do you want to talk a little bit of Wilson Contreras? Do we want to start there? There was a report, I think on Friday, from Cotillo, where it was that the Red Sox were – like usually the buzzwords are, oh, have expressed interest. This one, like, I don't know if you guys think there's a difference or not. You can tell me what you think. He used the term like pursuing. I'll get the exact report, but he used a different word than interest. And then Katie Wu from The Athletic, who just left the Cardinals beat but conveniently still reporting on the Cardinals, reported that the Red Sox have strong interest in acquiring Wilson Contreras from the Cardinals. So while I find that report, give me your guys' thoughts. I mean, Pat, I'll let you go first on this, Pat, because you were the one who brought Wilson Contreras, I believe, to the forefront after the Alonso thing happened last week.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a guy who, he's not on a long-term deal. He makes a good chunk of money, but nothing, you know, nothing over 25, 30 million like they seem apprehensive to shell out. But he's a guy who really fits the lineup really well. The bat plays. He won't hit for a necessarily high average, but he'll hit for a solid average. You can bank on him hitting 20 to 25 home runs, OPS over 800. The biggest part, the reason I kind of gravitated toward him over other options is A, the contract, B, the bat plays. But the biggest one is Breslow has been pretty adamant since the onset of the offseason about run prevention. And I know I am way bigger on first base defense than the two of you, but that really fits his narrative. Like, if you slot in Contreras at first, your worst defensive player on the field in theory is Trevor Story, who's about league average. So it does a ton for the pitching staff, which we all know Breslow cares a ton about. He's a bat that plays. It's a position of need. The contract is far more than digestible. I see the fit. I like the fit. I want the player.
Okay, to clarify the wording, in case anyone cares, the Cotillo wording was pursuing, and the Katie Wu report said significant interest. So take it for what it's worth. I have no idea if I want to care about pursuing versus interest. Who the hell knows? Who cares?
I think it's all the same. It's just different ways to say the same rumor. I do think this one might have legs, though. This seems like a very logical fit. I think Wilson Contreras is super underrated. The responses I've been seeing on Twitter, people just saying like, oh, this guy's just so average. He's not average. This has been a top 10 hitting first baseman for 3-4 years now, ever since he made the full-time move over there. He used to be a catcher when he was with the Cubs, if you're not familiar. I think, like I've said before, Pat, I'm kind of in between you and Gordo with first base defense. I think it's a bonus. I would have rathered Pete Alonso, who's a brutal defender at first base, over Contreras, but still, it's nice to have. I do think, like you said, if they get Bregman and Contreras, you could make an argument that the Red Sox have the best defense in Major League Baseball. So yeah, I would like that. Wilson Contreras, I might say I want him more than Okamoto, just because he's, you know what you're getting for sure. Maybe there's a little more upside with Okamoto, but I don't think it's a huge difference. So give me Contreras. And I should add, he's a guy who underperforms his expected stats, a guy who you could conceivably see getting a little boost in the results. Same type of player, but the results could be a little different at Fenway. Good fit for him. So yeah, Wilson Contreras, I think people are going to mock it if it happens. He's also a slow starter, so April might be brutal. If he has a slow start, people will just be mocking him, but then he'll click like he always does. So yeah, I buy the rumor, and I would like the player, and I think there's a decent shot it happens.
Here's my thing about the expected stuff, because if you go on his Baseball Savant page, not just last year, like the year before that too, like, it's red. Like, outside of like some of the swing and miss, whiff, strikeout metrics, like, yeah, he's not going to improve this team's strikeout rate, but the Red Sox need an impact bat, so they can't only prioritize that. And if they're getting a guy that's going to be an impact hitter, then you go for it. My issue with looking at the expected stats for a guy like Wilson Contreras, though, is that this is a guy who's been in the league for 10 years. It's the same thing I argued when they got Sonny Gray. It's like, do I really care about his metrics when he's basically been the same guy or around that every year? Like, his OPS by year last 4 years, going backwards from last year, it was 791 last year, 848 the year before that, 826, 815, 778. So, like, Sammy?
I'm not saying he's going to improve as a player. I'm saying he's going to play the same, but the results might look better if you put him in a better situation. I don't think it's like Sonny Gray. Like, he will be the same pitcher. The results just might be better if he's in a better situation. And when you're consistently underperforming your expected stats, I think it's a fair call out to expect a little bit more in a better spot.
Yes. Pat?
The other thing too is we're talking about the bat and how the results would translate. He's also a guy who, he doesn't have the power, like the gaudy power of a Pete Alonso or Kyle Schwarber, but 20 home runs and 135 this year. Last year he played 84 games. He hit 15 home runs. 2 years before that, 125, 113 games played, 20, 22. So this is a guy who you can legit pencil in with very, very high confidence. You're getting at least like 22 to 25 home runs if he's playing 130, 140 games.
Yeah, and that's the reason I've warmed up to it a little bit, because I mean, you look at the home runs, he's never hit more. What's his career high? 24? His career high in home runs is 24. But he also has had just two seasons playing above 125 games in his career, and he's never topped 140. But a lot of that is due to the fact that he was a catcher, at least part-time up until last year, where he was a full-time first baseman. Last year was the first year that he did not play a single game at catcher. So the per-game power is there. The injury concerns are real. The Red Sox have pursued they're pursuing Ketel Marte. He's a guy who's had injury concerns throughout his career as well. So it's not – I'm never the type of guy to pencil in injuries, even for guys who have had lots of injuries in their career. I think some guys, when they're significant injuries, can be career-altering. But other dudes, it's like Contreras. It's like he broke his hand on like the backswing of a bat. Like I'm not going to go there. But then you look at – because, Sam, you talked about a better spot at Fenway Park. So I look at the home runs, had he played all his games at certain ballparks, and you look at Wilson Contreras. It's his best ballpark would have been, it looks like, the Phillies, where he would have hit 30 home runs. Oh, no, sorry, the A's in the minor league park, he would have hit 32. Phillies, he would have hit 30. Every AL East team, Orioles 26, Yankees 23, Rays 25, Blue Jays 27. Fenway Park, it would have been 18. So it's not necessarily a swing that translates to home runs at Fenway Park. It will be a swing that translates. I'm sure his batting average would improve at Fenway Park. To me, I think the key question here is Wilson Contreras versus a guy like Okamoto, right? You've got a proven commodity versus someone totally unproven. But for a guy like Contreras, you're going to have to give up assets and pay money. So it really is kind of weighing the two. Also, Okamoto, multiple years younger. I'm not totally against Wilson Contreras, because I honestly think that he falls right in the tier of every other player that could be their secondary ad. It's just that I'm not going to let myself like, oh, he's one of the best guys left, so I'm going to convince myself to be as excited about him as I would have been about Pete Alonso.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I've never thought of him as a big home run guy. I think of him as a guy who has home run power, but he's more of a doubles guy, 31 doubles in 2025. I think that's a great trait to have if you're not going to hit home runs, especially at Fenway. It seems like you're hesitant a little bit on Contreras. Is it just the home run power?
It's the home run power. It's the games played. It's the age. It's the price. Like, I'm paying now prospects and legitimate money when there are guys, for instance, they didn't offer Jorge Polanco a contract. Well, Jorge Polanco could give you similar offensive production to Wilson Contreras. The defense, you don't know what he would be at first base, so you can't say that he would have given good first base defense, but it's like, what would you rather pay? $18 million a year plus whatever you prospects you have to get Wilson Contreras, or pay $20 million a year for 2 years of Jorge Polanco, no picks, no prospects, no nothing, or go Okamoto? Like, that's where my hesitancy comes from.
Ugh, I hate that I'm going to say this. I might prefer Contreras because he only makes $18.5 million, and it allows the Red Sox to add another bat as my eyes roll out of my head. But that's how we have to...
$1.5 million difference, though? Like,
compared to who?
Compared to Polanco. Are you talking about Okamoto? Oh,
no, I was thinking of Okamoto. But Polanco, he had, like, he's really good, had a great 2025, awesome in the playoffs. But like you said, he's never really played first base, save for, I think, one batter. I saw a bizarre stat that he played for one batter in, like, San Francisco or something. And he is wildly inconsistent year to year. So the ceiling is high, but the floor is low. Lean towards Contreras because I feel like he's a better middle of the order bat for the Red Sox. For the Mets, you could argue Polanco was a better fit. That's why they went for him. But I'm leaning ever so slightly towards Contreras in this debate. Yeah.
Question for you: when you're comparing them, are you comparing them as players, or are you taking into account like what you'd have to give up? Because we haven't gone there yet. What we think they would need to give up?
Everything okay. Put together. I think Contreras is a much safer bet, which to me means that his price should be higher. Could you argue that his ceiling is higher? I don't think you could, so I'm not going to say that. But I think that you know who they are. The Red Sox are really not in a place where they can take big risks, which is why I haven't really been super aggressively saying, like, got to get Okamoto. He's been kind of my, like, yeah, I'd be cool with him, but I have concerns. I don't think I've mentioned Murakami once. That's a guy who we really don't know what we're getting. So I like the... the kind of pay for certainty that you get when you get someone like Wilson Contreras. And I'm not saying he's a superstar. He's not my first pick for who I want to play first base for the Red Sox. I would have much preferred Pete Alonso, but I really think it's a good backup plan. And I think that Red Sox fans, just the way they're talking about him, don't realize how good this dude is.
Pat, if you had to pick, let's say Wilson Contreras, you're giving up. Well, maybe after this, we can get into like some sort of names that we think, because it's really hard when you've got a guy that's his age at his, like with Sonny Gray, you had a bunch of money due. And the only way the Cardinals were able to get stuff back was to eat half of it. We'll have to figure out what we think they would have to do with Contreras. But Contreras and whatever they'd have to give to get him, Okamoto, let's say 17 a year for 4 years, which would be $68 million. Does that seem fair? Or do we think?
How many years did you say? Four?
I said 4 years for 17. Could he get five? I don't know. He's like 29, isn't he?
Maybe. The thing is, like, if you... I hate using Yoshida as a comparison because I feel like it's a little bit lazy because they're both come from NPB and you didn't really know what you're going to get with either. But that's all I got. I'm afraid of another Yoshida situation where a guy comes over and he's good, but he's not as good as you thought he would be. And then 100%. You're stuck with him for years. And that's what's happened with Yoshida. And again, I hate using that comparison because you can just look at other players from NPB. Seiya Suzuki, he's been friggin' awesome. I think we all spoke about how he was on the trade block about a year ago, we thought, and we would love to have him. So it has nothing to do with guys coming from NPB. It's just the uncertainty of what kind of player is Okamoto going to be. I doubt that his numbers entirely translate perfectly from Japan to the U.S., but they could. It's just a big risk. So I just don't want the Red Sox to take a risk like that right now if they don't have to, which is why I put Contreras over Okamoto. All that being said, I would not complain if Okamoto was the guy. I believe in him. It's just you can't ignore that risk. It exists no matter what.
Pat, yeah. Before you give your answer on it, here's the contract for Wilson Contreras. I don't think we've actually said it explicitly here. So he's got two guaranteed years. Next year, it's $18 million. The year after, it's $18.5 million. And then the year after that, it's a $17.5 million team option. But if you turn it down, he gets a $5 million buyout. So it's, I think the math there goes $41.5 million guaranteed. Or you could just get the third year if he's really good. So, Pat, Contreras, Okamoto, like, where's your head at? And I mean, I could throw Polanco and Suarez into that, but I think I know with you that those two would come below Contreras and Okamoto.
Yeah, so for me, I'm leaning Contreras. And that's, A, because the certainty, like, when he's healthy, Contreras is as consistent gets. So there's that. I much prefer him on 2 years because it's so clean. Just this year, one more year, the $5 million buyout, whatever. But it's 2 years. It fills the hole for now and then opens up money down the road, options down the road, DH spot down the road, all this stuff. Where Okamoto is, we'll say, just as good defensively based on the scouting report. Maybe a little bit higher ceiling offensively. But he's going to get longer years. He's going to get just the round or a little bit less than what Contreras already makes. And you don't know what he's going to be. Like Sammy said, there's so much risk in an unproven commodity. And to just kind of handcuff yourself to a five-year deal at $16, $17 million a year for a guy that you're hoping translates really well, it's worth the risk in some places, but where they're so financially restricted by themselves, they do it to themselves. But it's not like you can just move on from it if it doesn't work and, you know, oh, yeah, it's worth a shot in the dark because we could always pay for it. No, like they have such a finite amount of money because they do it to themselves that to me, it's I prefer Contreras over the risk.
Yeah, that's oh, Sammy, go ahead.
I just want to give an example of how good of a player Contreras is. So he had a 123 OPS plus. I'll explain it again. If you're not familiar, OPS plus 100 is average. So 123 means you're 23% above league average for a hitter, and it's ballpark adjusted too. So that's the same exact number as Brent Rooker, who I get a million comments every time I mention anything with the A's, a bunch of comments like, would you trade for Rooker? Trade for Rooker. He's great. And he's a very good player, but same OPS plus in 2025 as Wilson Contreras. So again, he's being a little bit underrated. I like the contract too. The option for 2028, that's awesome. Like, you could keep him if you want for that year. You could also not keep him. So it gives the Red Sox financial flexibility and also roster flexibility. There's just a lot to like. A lot to like with Contreras, and the more I talk about it, the more I like the idea.
Yes. And then, I mean, what I will say is that there is value in certainty, and a lot of the options that we're looking at, and you can look at the two Japanese players front and center there. Like Pat said, when you invest long-term in these guys, you don't know what you're going to get. And then if they're not what you think, you've seen exactly how the Red Sox have operated, in large part because they've not only had Masataka Yoshida's money on the books, but they've had his roster spot taken up and his spot in the lineup. Like, he's not a guy that gives you value off the bench because he doesn't play defense and he doesn't run the bases. Like Okamoto or Murakami, for that matter, if those guys don't work out, they're corner infielders. They don't give you value on the bases. Like, maybe Okamoto can play first base defense above average, but like, who cares about that in a bench role? Like, if these guys bust, like, you're in the same exact position as you were with Yoshida, and you're in it for a longer term than if you, let's say, sign Eugenio Suarez, trade for Wilson Contreras, trade for Isak Paredes. Like, that's the big difference. And that's why I am definitely higher on Wilson Contreras than I am signing Okamoto, even considering the cost. That said, this is just with my guess, because we were texting in the group chat, and Pat and you and Sammy gave two different prices. I forget Pat's, but I remember Sammy asked if we would trade Casas in that deal, and that's something I wouldn't be for.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Yeah, the price is such a mystery, because are they going to pay a little bit more to get money off the books? Are they going to take the full contract and get a little bit more? It's tough. But going back to the Okamoto contract, worst case scenario, right? I would say that 75% of Sox fans are counting down the days until Yoshida's contract is up, off the books, open that up, whatever. The worst thing that could happen is you have another Yoshida contract overlapping and then outlasting the Yoshida contract. Meaning you have one shit contract on the books that has, after this year, is it 2 years left? 2 years left at this point for Yoshida? Okay. So his 2 years are up. Finally, he's off the books. And then if you go out and give, we'll say, Okamoto a five-year deal, and he's not what you expected, he's a platoon bat, whatever, you still have three more years of that. So in totality, you have 8 years of a shit contract that, even though it shouldn't, is limiting you from spending.
Okay, I got a question for you guys. We kind of did this exercise the other day, and it was a lot of fun. So I want to have you rank the three guys we're talking about. Just assume that I'm talking about Suarez, Okamoto, and Contreras. So let's assume that they all get median market value for the free agents, and let's say the trade for Contreras is a little painful. It's kind of what we expect, like a solid package, but nothing crazy. How do you rank him in terms of who you want the most?
My answer to that in part depends on the other bat that they get. Like, if they got
play first base, to be clear, by the way, like, they're all playing first base, not thinking of Suarez as third base.
Right. Like, to me, I'm much more interested in Eugenio Suarez if, let's say, they got Alex Bregman instead of Ketel Marte. Because Ketel Marte, I could see having enough home runs to hit 2-3 and be that guy. And if you combine, like, let's say, 25 home runs from Marte and 20 from Bregman, or sorry, 25 from Marte and 20 from Contreras, you get to the number you need to get to. Whereas, like, if it's Bregman and Contreras, like that's less. Like maybe I want Suarez. Like if they get Alex Bregman, I think I'm going Eugenio Suarez first, and then going Contreras, and then going Okamoto. If it's if it's Ketel Marte, I'll go Contreras first, then Suarez, then
Okamoto. Let's assume, for the sake of this conversation, let's assume that Bregman's the other back, because I think that is by far the most likely outcome. Yeah. I think it's much more likely than Marte. So let's assume it's Bregman. So yours is Suarez.
Yes, but not by a lot. Like, honestly, like the way I see it is all of these guys and Isak Paredes, who, by the way, I'd have over all
put him
guys.
In. Put him in. Isak put him in there, too.
Paredes would be above Suarez for me.
Okay, cool. Now but I got four. This is even better.
But all of them are right there in the same goddamn tier. Like, legit, I would react pretty much the same to all of them in terms of how much do I think they can impact the Red Sox in the year 2026.
It's weird because Suarez is, I would say, the worst defender, by far the most strikeouts, but by far the most home runs, too. He's the most interesting profile out of all those. Or, sorry, the most intriguing.
Intriguing.
Wow, almost missed an opportunity to use my favorite word. He could be amazing. He could be a disaster. That's ballsy of you, Gordo. Pat, what do you think? And we're including Paredes.
I'm going Contreras, Paredes, Okamoto, Suarez.
Is there a tier cutoff? I think that's another key part of this. Is there a cutoff where like there's a big gap between like let's say
yes.
three? Where's the cutoff? Where's the gap?
After Okamoto, there's about 60 feet of shit, and then there's Eugenio Suarez. Because my thing is, here's where I'm kind of coming from. So we're going under the notion that Bregman is back. So in that sense, I would much rather get as many 20 home run bats as I can while maximizing the defense. So to me, that's Contreras. Because in a vacuum, you have Bregman, you have Story, you have Contreras, you have Roman, you have Abreu, you have five or six guys who could feasibly hit you 20 home runs. Cool, fine, great. With that, you have, on paper, probably a top five defensive team in the league to go with a decent rotation. So to me, that's kind of just the way the stars align there. You kind of give up on the power while maximizing the defense, taking care of the pitching, all that stuff. Paredes has a little bit more pop, probably not as good defensively. Okamoto, it's
know.
An unknown, but he could be really good. He could be, you know, a guy who hits 270, 280, 20 home runs, really good defense. So that to me is enough. I am someone who feels good about him coming over. He might struggle a little bit, but I don't think he's a dumpster fire kind of signing. And then Eugenio Suarez can kiss my ass. he strikes out way too much. He's going to be 35. He's horrible defensively. And I'm not even confident in his power. Like I think we saw an all-time spike there. It would not surprise me wherever he goes next year if he does not hit 35 home runs.
Here's the thing. He could miss out on 15 home runs from last year and he's still at 34. So he could drop off a ton. The thing about Okamoto, like everyone wants to say, oh, like his profile translates. He's like a high floor guy. We said the same things about Masa Yoshida. Oh, he puts the bat on the ball. He puts the ball in play. He's going to hit. Like he may not field. We don't know if he's going to field, but he's going to hit. Like that's the thing is we don't know. And the other thing we're not.
Do you remember the conversation about his defense? I remember this so well. People were saying, oh, he's only considered a bad defender in Japan because the standard is much higher there. And me, being an idiot, I kind of bought that narrative and was like, oh, okay. Yeah, he'll be fine. He'll be fine in the field. He's fucking awful in left field at Fenway, which once you learn how the monster works, should be relatively easy. Manny Ramirez was solid at it for years, and he's awful defensively. So egg on my face for buying that narrative. It's just...
Well, they watched him from a Ferris wheel, so come on. Like, what were we supposed to do?
Forgot about
The other thing we're not considering here is the fact, like, we don't talk about Murakami a ton here because we haven't really heard the Sox connected to him much, but then we spent so much time last podcast talking about the Sox get all the guys they're not connected to. That whole thing about him hitting 0.95 against velocity apparently was not real, and he actually has, like, solid numbers against velocity. I don't know how much more we should be talking about this guy, but we probably should be talking more about this guy, especially considering the Red Sox need home runs, and at minimum, he's going to hit home runs.
So I saw that too, but I just put in our chat, I saw another Twitter user say, no, that's not true, and he posted a picture of Murakami's stats, translated it from Japanese to English, and it had him hitting 105 on fastballs over 93.2 miles an hour. So
I saw,
what the fuck? I don't understand. I saw, like, this is the weirdest.
Why is this so hard to find out?
I saw another one. It's oh my god, I should know name it, should know the name of the account. It begins with a Y. They do a bunch of MPB tweets.
Oh yeah, Yaku Cosmopolitan.
Yes.
Let me get the right name. I think I botched that. Let me give me 1 sec.
While you look up the name to give them credit, they had a stat that he hits like 188 on over 93. So we've seen point less than 100. We've seen 105. We've seen 188. Yakya Cosmopolitan. Yeah. Either way, it sounds like it's not good. So.
Well, it all falls into the BA scouting report I referenced last podcast, where it's like, yeah, this guy has not done this well, but his bat speed and his hand speed should at least translate to an adjustment. It may take longer than a year, which is why maybe it's not the perfect fit for a team like the Red Sox. But, like, again, if you think that this guy's going to, in the year 2027, hit 40-plus bombs, then, like, yeah, you put up with it for a year, even though you want to win this year, and you go for it. Like, you got to trust your judgment. But to me, I still stand by it. I think the Red Sox have a chance to win this year and should attack certainty. So I stand there. But if I'm comparing the Japanese guys, I would go with the guy who at least has a chance to be a monster, as opposed to the guy that we think has a good floor, but we've been down that road.
So my answer to the question, I would go, I think I might have the same order as Pat. Contreras number one. I'd go Paredes two. Okamoto and Suarez. I don't have the giant mountain of shit like Pat does between those two. I think Suarez, he averages 162 average, 32 home runs a year. And I also don't think he's a bad defender. He had a bad defensive season last year, but historically he's been very solid over there and at third base. And I think if you put him at first, he'd quickly become at least an average defender. Not that that's a huge deal at first base. Still, I think I would go with Okamoto. He seems like a safe-ish bet to click in Major League Baseball, whether that means 15 home runs and a 750 OPS or 25 home runs and a low 800s OPS. I'm not 100% sure. But Suarez has that very low floor where if those strikeouts catch up on him as he's entering his mid-30s, it could get ugly. And let me remind you guys, with Seattle last year, he was in 53 games, 0.3 WAR player, hit 189 with a 682 OPS. So he slowed down big time. Granted, small sample size, so take it with a grain of salt, but he slowed down big time. So I'll put Okamoto one spot ahead of him, but it's very, very close. So Contreras, Paredes, Okamoto, Suarez.
The difference, though, first of all, Suarez, yeah, he did absolutely suck after he got traded to the Mariners. He also wasn't good with the Mariners last time he was there. He's been good everywhere else. So maybe the ballpark has something to do with it.
Tough ballpark, but yeah.
The reason I'm way more comfortable with Suarez than Okamoto is also in large part because of the contract length. Like, I think Eugenio Suarez is about to get 2 years. And I think Okamoto, it's about whether he gets 4 or 5. So if Okamoto busts, like, you're stuck for a while, the same way you've been stuck with Yoshida. If Suarez busts, like, this is a guy who can play multiple positions, come off the bench, like, he's not a good defender, but, like, you could reasonably have him fill in on off days if you need to bench the guy. I don't think you would. But the downside is far less, just because it would be 2 years. That's why I think if I had to say where my gap is, I have Paredes, Suarez, and Contreras kind of in one bubble, and then Okamoto a tier below, because I think he's probably the riskiest of the bunch. And also, there's the most downside because of the years, but there's also the most risk because you just haven't seen him.
If he has a
750 OPS and 15 home runs, that's awful for a first baseman. That's a disaster.
There's also a shot he hits 25 home runs and has a low 800s OPS and he's picking it over at first base. And you're like, holy shit, we just fell into gold here. It's so hard. I mean,
consider that gold. Like, that's okay. Like, that's okay.
No, come on. Low 800s OPS with 25 home runs. That's like a three and a half.
For a first baseman.
How many first basemen have 800 OPSs? Like seven of them?
I'd be curious about that. How many first basemen hit over 25 home runs, and how many first basemen topped an 800 OPS each of the last like two or three years?
I'm on it. Keep going. I'll put my finger
Did Vlad Guerrero Jr. did not hit 25 home runs? That's your guy, Gordo. He hit 23.
Yeah, but let's be real. Vlad's hitting 25.
Doesn't matter. I'm interested to see this because growing up for us early 2000s, all of us watching baseball, first base, you hit 30, 40 home runs. Nobody cared about your defense. Nobody cared if you could move well, run at all, just hit bombs. And it's different nowadays because people don't value first basemen. So you get less of the elite athletes playing first base. Therefore, the production of the position drops off. So I'm interested to see what Pat finds with how many first base. He's shaking his head right now on camera.
Here's the thing, it's not going to be a lot. Here's the thing is like if your goal is low 800s OPS and 20 to 25 home runs, you could have gotten that on a 2-year deal with Jorge Polanco. We don't know what the defense would have been, but I'm saying like you have those certain numbers available for you and you're attacking uncertainty.
I got it. First baseman who hit 25 home runs this year with an OPS over 800 was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
What about either or? Like, how many of them hit 25 home runs?
So here we go. So Pete Alonso, obviously, whatever. Nick Kurtz, 36 home runs over 1,000 OPS. Michael Busch, 34 home runs, 866 OPS. Vinny P, not an 800 OPS guy. Spencer Torkelson, 31 home runs, not an 800 OPS guy. Matt Olson, 29 home runs, 850. Bryce Harper, 27, 844.
Wait, Matt Olson had an 850 last year? He was treated like he had a down year.
Yeah.
He walks a lot, doesn't he?
Christian Walker, 27 home runs, not an 800 OPS guy. Ben Rice, 26 home runs, 836 OPS. Freddie Freeman did not hit 25 home runs. Vladdy had an 800 OPS, but he hit 23.
So, dude, 25 home runs and an 800 OPS and great defense is a really good first baseman.
Yeah, Gordo, but 25 home runs is also the ceiling of Okamoto based off
what about 20 home runs and 800 OPS?
But that's not what we're talking about, Gordo. We're saying if he does hit 25 as an 800 OPS and is playing great defense, that is a stud first baseman.
Right, but if that's the ceiling. Like,
let me ask you this. So let's say Okamoto comes over and he has 20 home runs and an 800 OPS.
What about it? Like, would I like that?
With phenomenal defense.
Are you asking if I would?
Yeah. Would you like that?
I mean, to me, no, because the Red Sox don't have a 30 home run bat. So if they're just filled with a bunch of 15 to 25 home run bats, like you're right where you were last year.
Well, I just described Wilson Contreras.
Right. Like that's why I'm not super jazzed up about Wilson Contreras. I think it's fine. That's why I was so Pete Alonso, Kyle Schwarber. That needs to be like that guy needs to be priority number one.
So me and you have been in the same stride throughout most of the offseason saying we want power. I'm okay sacrificing power for defense if you have six guys who can hit 20.
You have the guys that can do it, but will they all do it? Like, that's the thing is like, we're talking exactly like how we talked about the rotation like 2 years ago, where it's like, oh, if this guy does this and this guy does this and this guy does this and this guy does this.
You got a ton of talent, though. You got so much talent.
I agree, you do.
Roman Anthony alone is, I think, a 30 home run guy. Abreu's awesome. We're talking like Bregman's coming back. If he's back, that's huge. Story just came off a great season. Like, I don't think it's the same as the rotation. The rotation was a ton of question marks. We know who a lot of these guys are.
You're right. It's not the same. It's not apples to oranges, dude.
With
the rotation, it was like, oh, if all of these things go right, we could have a bunch of threes. But right now, like with the offense, it's like, oh, if these things go right, like we could have a bunch of, you know, five hitters. You look up and down the lineup, and if they add any of these first base options that's not Eugenio Suarez or Isak Paredes, and they add Alex Bregman, then you will have zero guys who have hit 30 home runs since 2019.
Gordo, who is terrifying in the 2025 Blue Jays lineup? And I know you're going to say Vlad, but like we just went over, he hit 23 home runs. 23 home runs with a, what, 848 OPS. Very good, but that is not what we're describing now. Like, who is scary in that lineup? Most home runs, if you want to know, is Springer had 32. Career year for him.
Yes, somehow. Definitely. Yeah. I was not afraid of George Springer in that lineup until like September when I finally accepted that his year was for real. Vlad Jr. is the guy you fear in that lineup. Yes, he hit 23 home runs in that lineup, but what did he do every year before that? 30 the year before that, 26 the year before that, 32 the year before that, 48 the year before that in his big breakout year. Like
48, we know what 48 in a minor league ballpark was that year. He was playing in Buffalo for most of that year. So that needs an asterisk. Still a good year, right, but like that was in Buffalo.
You saw it in the postseason. Like, don't, like, you can't try to argue with me that Vladdy's not an elite guy to fear. Like,
he's very good, but I'm just saying you don't need guys who hit 40 home runs in the regular season to be good. You need guys who turn it on in October. And Vlad is like a good example. In this whole 2025 Blue Jays lineup, you go from catcher to DH. It's 15 home runs, 23, 7, 18, 21, 11, 20, 12, 32. Like, there's no monstrous 40 home run bat in there. Vlad feels like that, but he's done it once, and it was when he was playing in a minor league ballpark, so it needs a bit of nuance. That's all I'm saying is I want home runs too. I wanted Pete Alonso, would have been the most obvious, elegant, smartest fit, but like Wilson Contreras is really fucking good, and I think he deserves his respect is what I'm saying.
He does deserve respect, but like Vlad, even this year, in a year where he only had 23 home runs, had an 848 OPS. The year before, he had 30 home runs, he had a 940 OPS. If Wilson Contreras,
talking OPS, this isn't home runs. Like it's
if Wilson Contreras has a 940 OPS, he can hit one home run for all I care. Like, like I don't, like, you know what I mean? It's like when we're talking about these low 800s OPS guys, high 700s OPS guys. If that's going to be your lineup, you have to have a diverse portfolio of guys. Like, not every 795 OPS is created equally. Like, you need to have guys who are on base guys who draw walks, guys who hit the ball out of the ballpark. Like, if you just have a bunch of Luis Arizes and they all hit 300 with a 780 OPS, which I don't even think he would get to 780 if he hit 300.
Yeah, but, right.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, if you have a bunch of those guys, like, you're not going to win ball games.
Is there even, dude, there are less than 50 players in Major League Baseball who had an 800 OPS or higher last year. It's not, I think
Wait,
800
say that one more
is,
time. The number was 800 or 850?
800, 850. Here, I'll count how many have 850.
There's not many who had 850s. The bar is going down. I agree.
Why is this not loading? Okay, 850. There were 18 guys, and one of them is Rafael Devers.
I'm not going to go on my soapbox again about how...
No, we don't have to. We don't have to. But, dude, George Springer had the third best OPS in Major League. He had a higher OPS than Cal Raleigh. That was the weirdest... Nobody talks about that. Fucking weird. But all I'm saying is Wilson Contreras, our hypothetical Okamoto stat line, is very good. And I think, like, maybe we're too caught up and we just grew up with Big Poppy with a 900 OPS every year. And we see Aaron Judge with his 1,000 OPS every friggin' week, and Otani. So, but 800, I think, is you're probably an all-star.
It is just, all I'm saying is that it is hard to win a World Series without a superstar bat in the middle of the lineup. So I hope Roman Anthony is that. I think that at some point in his career, he will be that. But to have that be the guy that you have to count on doing it in 2026, like, you're not necessarily setting yourself up for success.
How many 30 home run guys do you think there were this year? This is interesting to me. It's kind of a funny number.
I bet around
30 home runs, you said?
20 to
30 home run.
I'm going to go with...
Is it more? Oh, because like Torkelson.
I'm going to go with 30.
30. 30, wow. 30 home run guys. That's it. You got it. And then poor Cody Bellinger with 29, along with Olsen and Yelich. Ketel Marte, only 28.
Quick nugget before we pivot, just because his name came up and I was curious about the OPS stuff. Dude, Luis Arraez, this year, he played 154 games. He walked 34 times. He struck out 21 times. He hit 292. He had a 719 OPS.
Dude, it's crazy.
Sucks, man.
What did I say? If he hit 300 and he get to like 780 is what I or something. He hit 290 something and he was a 719.
Yeah, dude,
that's crazy.
Last year, he led the league in hits, led the league with a 314 average. He walked 24 times. He struck out 29 times. 739 OPS.
That's unreal.
How is that possible? That's a bad baseball player. I'll say that's singles. A bad baseball player.
Yeah, he's not built for a team like the Red Sox. I'll say that.
He's a good number nine hitter.
Oh, imagine him hitting nine for the Dodgers. Oh,
don't.
Okay, wait, Sam. Someone, I think Sammy. You brought up Ketel Marte because he had 28 home runs. Rapid fire, a couple of questions here because I know we have another thing we have to get to before we wrap. Would either of you guys, because this was written by Alex Speer, he was talking about the Red Sox maybe not necessarily being closed off to trading Marcelo Meyer. How would you guys feel if Marcelo Meyer was included in a Ketel Marte trade?
I can't do that. I can't. I could not pull the trigger on that. Here's why. I think Ketel Marte is going to be fucking great in 2026. Then you got to lock out. Then you come back and he's 34. I can't punt the entire Marcelo Meyer rookie contract for one guaranteed year of production and then a 34-year-old second baseman. I just can't do it. Big fan of Marte. Great player. I can't do it.
Yeah. I think what you factor in Marte's age, you can't do it because Marcelo's ceiling is so high. The injuries are a thing, obviously, but seems like it's all in the past now. But I mean, his rookie contract for Sammy, you said it, like a guy who after the lockout's 34 years old, who knows who will be playing second base at that point. I wouldn't move. There's like a handful of guys, truly 4 to 5 guys in the league who could realistically get traded, who I would trade Marcelo for. Ketel is not one of them.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the lockout has a lot to do with it, but it's like, if you get Ketel Marte and trade Meyer, I would think that opens the door for a Bregman return. Now your infield is 32-year-old Marte, 32-year-old Bregman, and 33-year-old Story. That means next year they're 33, 33, and 34. And the year after that is like that. And that's if you play baseball that year. The year after that, Story's off the books, but now you're 34 and 34, and you don't have Marcelo Meyer playing shortstop. You're hoping that Franklin Arias is the guy. Like, it just it takes your window and just unnecessarily smushes it shut when, like, you could just pay Alex Bregman and not trade Marcelo Meyer. Like, that's an option here. So, yeah.
That's the right option. That's the right option.
Yeah. Like, if Cole Reagans were on the table, which, by the way, it's no longer on the table because the Royals traded for Isaac Collins, 118 OPS plus, and signed – who did they sign? They signed the Lane Thomas. So, yeah, like, they're not trading for your outfielder. They're probably not trading Cole Reagans. Like, kiss that one goodbye. But let's say, like, that were on the table, Hunter Green were on the table, then that's when you listen. Not for Ketel Marte. Not for an aging shortstop, second, third, like the most athletic positions in your infield, now all going to be aging veterans. Like, ugh.
Ryan Jeffers.
You love Ryan Jeffers.
Dude, also, with that equation, your first baseman may or may not be able to walk or move at all in Tristan Casas. So, like, that's not a great... That's one, the more we talk about Marte and Bregman, that scenario, that gets grim really quickly if they don't win the 2026 World Series.
Yeah, also, by the way, another thing is that if you do that, Tristan Casas is your no-doubt first baseman, and we don't even know, as you said, if he can walk. So,
like a creaky leg walking out to first. Like,
he's like that peg leg guy from Family Guy, like the pirate dude.
Oh, what's his name?
I keep wanting to say Patchy the Pirate, but it's obviously not Patchy the Pirate. Patchy the Pirate had a hook for a hand, right?
Yep.
No, so it's Seamus.
Seamus.
Last thing before enough said. I feel like Michael King got a ton of play on social media today, and it was like literally in the end for no reason at all whatsoever. But because it got so much play, we should talk about it here. Like, if you weren't following on social, Pete Abe had a report that he dropped on Blue Sky that was basically like Michael King is deciding between the Red Sox, the Yankees, and the Orioles. He's down to those three teams, and a decision is imminent. And then Cotillo on Twitter basically was like, yeah, like, King would love to come to Boston, but it's a wide field. There's a lot of teams still in this, and no decision is imminent. And then Pete Abe basically retracted the entire report. So we're basically right where we were, which is that the Red Sox are in on King. And King, well, I guess what's new is that Michael King, who is a Rhode Island native, and a BC, I don't know if he graduated, BC grad, BC student, I don't know, BC alum. He's a BC alum. And he would love to play for the Red Sox, which is great. Love when guys want to play for the Red Sox. Would you guys want to see the Red Sox pay, let's say, $25 million a year? I mean, to be honest with you, I feel like his originally the contract projections were $25 million a year for 3 years. It's going to go higher than that, I feel like, with all these teams in. Let's say, would you pay 4 years, $80 million for Mike King, understanding that he's got the qualifying offer attached, which means the Red Sox will lose a second and a fifth round pick?
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
No, I would not want them to do that, believe it or not. Don't be mad at me, guys. I am scared of what Mike King will be. Didn't he have thoracic outlet syndrome, Jurassic Park, whatever it's called? Thoracic nerve issue he had. So that's scary.
He didn't get like a big surgery, right? Because he did pitch again.
I'm not sure. But either way, he's coming off of an injury-riddled season. We've spoken a million times about how the Red Sox need to be sure of who they're getting. I wouldn't be upset if the Red Sox got Michael King. His ceiling is super friggin' high. I would just be very nervous, and this is without even mentioning the draft pick compensation that they'd be losing. Second and fifth round, I believe you said, Gordo, right? That's that's not nothing. People scoff at that. I also like if he is not the what was the year he was very good? He was very good
last year.
2 years ago. No, not last year. It was
2024.
Yeah, 2024, he was a 4.1 WAR pitcher, 31 games, 2.95 ERA. If he's not that, which by the way, he has done that one time. That was the only season he's done that. That he had good numbers the year before, but it was in a much smaller sample, only 104 innings. That's a big risk. If he's not to that level, then it's one of those situations where I'm like, okay, how much better is he than Sonny Gray? How much better is he than Connelly Early at the end of 2026? Like, maybe he'll be better. But is it enough to warrant really, really putting a lot of money on the books? I'm just not sold.
So to clarify the health thing, I don't have what he had, but I'm just looking at he did finish the year healthy. He pitched in the playoffs. He pitched in September. He had a start on May 18th and then did not make another start until he had that weird outing against the Red Sox on August 9th. So he missed close to 3 months. But then he came back, finished the year healthy. Had one horrendous start in there, and then, he was. I mean, that's the thing is when he's pitched, he's been good. He had he has been good.
Yeah, no, he's not bad. Like again, I'm not gonna be like, damn it, they got Michael King. If that happens, it's for me a little too risky.
Pat, what do you think?
I love me some Michael King, but I do think it's a move of luxury. Like if they were like, fuck it, we're spending all this money. Like we have no cap, we have no limitations. Let's just win. I'd be like, yeah, go get Mike King. Absolutely. But knowing what we know about how they're planning on spending, I don't see how they can do Mike King, Bregman, and another bat without moving some significant pieces that I don't even think they can move, meaning Yoshida, Jordan Hicks. Even if they move Duran, I just don't see how with the money they can make those three things work. But then, like, if you sign King, like, that to me signals you're moving Bayo. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's a lot of moves have to come with it that you're almost like, okay, this isn't worth it. And that's kind of where I'm at with that.
That's a good point, Pat. A move of luxury. That's a good way to frame it. Like, it's if you don't need him to be really good, then you go get him. Like the Blue Jays.
Yeah, or if money didn't matter. Yeah,
if money, that's the key.
That's who,
if money didn't matter. Because you look at where they were last year, they basically $249 million on the payroll last year. They're already up to $226 right now. And with reports that, yeah, they might be willing to increase it a little bit, but it doesn't even sound like they're willing to go up into the second tier. Like, it definitely does. It sounds like they're definitely staying below the second luxury tax line. If you signed Mike King, let's say for 20, if you sign him for $23 million, you are at where you were last year, and that's before adding any either of the two bats or a bullpen arm. So to me, it only makes sense if he's willing to take such a discount to come home to Massachusetts or to New England that, okay, we can sign him, trade Bayo for value because we've got King on this value contract. Now we've got all these extra prospects we can trade for a bat. Like, it's going to take a ton of maneuvering, and you only do that if he's willing to take such an obvious discount that your hands are tied and you got to do it. I love Mike King. I would have taken him over Sonny Gray, but you have Sonny Gray.
Have you guys changed your mind at all about Ranger Suarez? Because I've been high on him all offseason. I feel like nobody likes him.
Well, I fucking hate Ranger. No, I'm kidding.
Even if I loved him. Even if
you
just
don't like
him.
Guys named Suarez. Pat has a thing against Suarez's.
Whoa!
Suarez,
I like Robert Suarez. I think Robert Suarez is going to be phenomenal next year.
Dude, you're always hating on Robert Suarez. You're like, don't ever fucking bring his name up in front of me.
Even if I loved Ranger Suarez, though, it's the same thing. If he's making 20-something million a year, which he will, it'll probably be like mid to high 20s for him.
Then he's so still, good, dude.
You're stuck
he's so
doing
good.
The same exact stuff. The same exact maneuvering.
He
if
averages,
you wanted to add him, then don't get Sonny Gray.
Yeah.
Like that's,
he averages
that's the Red Sox put themselves.
26 starts, a 3.38 ERA. And he's been in the league for 8 years. Like, he's so good. And because he doesn't have gross velocity numbers, people just scoff at him. But you know who else doesn't have great velocity? Sonny Gray. Joe?
We may all disagree on who we don't like, but we all know who we don't like. Framber Valdez.
Did you guys hear the thing about
him? I still like Framber.
We all hate
him. I still like Framber.
Dude, that thing about
he's good.
Do you guys hear what he's doing? He made a 20-minute long video showing that he's a good guy, and he's apparently showing it to teams. Like,
if you have to show that you're a good guy, then you're not a good guy.
That, like, low-key changes my mind because it shows he's a little self-aware, but I'm still kind of like, you freak me out a little bit, Big Fram.
Talk about the king of consistency. Awesome. That's Framber Valdez, but he's not.
I wouldn't mind. I would take Framber over Michael King just because of what you said, Gordo. He's just consistent. And also, Framber is an elite name.
Do you want to do some Nuff Said before we get out of here?
Yeah.
I can go first. Peace out to... And this is not like a peace out. It's like a peace out, man, to Dustin May, who signed with the Cardinals and gives them like a total of one established starting pitcher, I guess, in their rotation. Nah, they have like a couple. But like that's why they're probably a good fit for a Contreras trade, is they could use a young, controllable, optionable starter. And the Red Sox have a million of those. But yeah, Dustin May signed a deal with the Cardinals and is no longer with the Red Sox. And that trade was not good. And they probably should have traded for somebody better at the trade deadline, especially considering they gave up James Tibbs, who is not some nothing prospect. And there was a reason the Dodgers liked him. And they got another guy who I forget his name, but he played really well in LA as well.
Earhart.
Yeah. So peace out to Dustin May. Good luck with Haim in St. Louis.
Someone posted a picture of him. It might've been you, Gordo, in a Red Sox uniform. It's him like screaming, like hyped up. And in my head, I'm like, he had a moment worthy of that. But if
Houston.
You look back,
yes.
He did that. Yes. Yeah. But he did that a lot.
A ton.
I started going through his starts and stuff, and he would get out of a moderate jam, like a runner on first in a tie game. And he'd get out of the inning and be like, let's go.
So well, that's the thing is if he were good, Sox fans would have loved him because like he's got the high emotion. He's got the wild red hair. Like,
he looks Irish. He looks Irish. Just say it. Red Sox fans love that. Pat loves that. Pat loves Irish guys. He's Irish.
He is Irish.
Yeah. Representation matters.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
I got enough said. One of the scariest things I have ever seen in my life was watching Philip Rivers play football today at the age of 44.
That was crazy.
Like, every time he dropped back, it was just fire feet. Like, he would just do fire feet and move like 3 inches. Like, there, like, he looked so bad. And I love Philip Rivers. I love Philip Rivers growing up. He looks so out of shape, so slow. He's throwing absolute fucking muffins. Like, it was just, there's no one the Colts could have gotten that gave them better chances. That blows my mind. And I get that he worked with Shane Steichen in the past in LA. He has the history with Indy. I get the fit, but this is a 44-year-old grandfather who has not played football in 5 years.
Dude, and you're being ass, and he would like go, and the ball would just so 13 yards.
Slow. Being literal, Pat is being literal when he calls him a grandpa. He is literally a grandfather of multiple grandkids. That is, imagine watching your grandfather in the NFL live.
I believe I did fact check this, but I did see it somewhere from somewhere that I'm like, okay, this isn't just bullshit. His oldest kid is older than Tyler Warren.
Oh,
big
Tyler Warren, who he got blown up a couple of times with some late balls.
Yeah, he threw some hospital balls to Tyler Warren today.
Yeah,
because he was mad, dude. It's nepotism. He's like, it should have been my son.
He's got enough kids. If he wants to put his own team of Rivers in the NFL, he could.
There are players on the Colts who have children younger than Philip Rivers' grandchild.
Wow. That my brain's kind of trying to figure that sentence out, but that sounds crazy. Like, kids who are younger. Yeah, okay, I think I get that. Either way, he's old and has a lot of kids.
He should be playing football. And then the craziest part of this whole thing to me is he was a finalist for the Football Hall of Fame. Because he played today, his clock resets. He comes off of the ballot, has to wait 5 years for it to reset, and then he re-enters.
Joe?
Well, 2031, if you want to get the exact year right. But
yeah,
imagine being in that locker room hearing you're signing Philip Rivers. Be like,
season's over. Yeah, they stink, though. Colts are cooked. They have their schedule is insane, and they're just not that good. I thought they were frauds, even when they were winning. I just don't. Daniel Jones, give me a break.
Tammy, wish him well, though.
Yeah, try to keep it light on Play Tessie, but we had a serious tragedy in the community. There was a shooting at Brown University in Rhode Island. Awful situation. I just wanted to provide some information. The Rhode Island Blood Center is needing donors, type O blood donors. So if you're in Massachusetts or Rhode Island or in the area, get down there. Awful to see. Senseless act of violence. Obviously, none of us ever want any situation like that to happen to anyone. So sad I have to bring this up, but you know, it's good to donate blood and do what you can to help out the community.
Yeah, that was unreal. I didn't even hear about it outside of like Adam Schefter retweeted like a Patriots statement. I read it. I was like, oh my God, what happened to Brown?
Yeah.
This stuff happens way, way too much. It's
close to home. But anyway, sorry to bring down the mood. I just thought it was important to, you know, reference what happened, and it's hits close to home. That is, I mean, I'm about like an hour 15 from Brown. It's friggin' scary to think about. So, you know, donate if you can and just send good vibes to the people down there.
Yeah, good to end on that. If you can, always donate. That's going to do it for Play Tessie, episode 296. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, rate 5 stars, and then follow us on the socials at Play Tessie, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. We'll be back. What's this? We'll be back on Wednesday. We'll be back on Wednesday. Till then, remember, subscribe, get that notification when it comes out. But for Play Tessie, episode 296, for Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it is Gordo here. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.